Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's Lisa. I am here with, as always,
Tawny,
who happens to be in a Metallica Christmas sweater. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah, welcome. I felt like I had to wear this today.
You do. You have a narrow window.
I do.
We have a really good topic today that I know we touch on a lot, but there was a full-blown article on it in The Atlantic, which we've linked to in the show notes, so you can read it. I actually bookmarked this to my browser, and it's called No One Cares! Exclamation point. Our fears about what other people think of us are overblown and rarely worth fretting over. And it is by a man named Arthur Brooks, who does a How to Build a Life series weekly on The Atlantic. And it's How to Build a Happy Life, basically, is his podcast series. And that's definitely worth checking out if that's of interest. But it immediately caught my eye because we talk about so much in recovery about worrying what other people might think of us, if we tell them, if we don't. I mean, I know for me, when I was drinking and out of control, I worried so much about what other people thought of me. And that gave me, like, I measured my self-esteem against what I thought somebody else thought of me. And I often drank over things that related to what I thought somebody else thought of me. And in recovery, I've really learned to, recognize that when it happens. And if I'm paying too much attention to, getting in somebody's head, not staying there, trying to get out. And the couple of things that my 12-step sponsor told me early on that I would always come back to that were helpful are what you think. What other people think of you is none of your business. And that's really true. And I try to think of that all the time. And also the whole notion that we talk about 12-step a lot about ourselves being the piece of shit at the center of the universe, that we think we're terrible and we think everybody's looking at us and thinking how terrible we are all the time. And so I was really interested to see this article, which even I'm just going to read this one sentence that talks about, in the worst cases, anxiety about the approval of others can blow up into a debilitating fear, a diagnosable psychological condition called allodoxophobia. So that is worrying about the opinions of others to an excessive amount. And that can, it's a mental health condition if it gets too far, but there are also behaviors that we can take to, things to remind ourselves of to help us from, getting past that in the everyday and certainly keeping us away from having something that would be a diagnosable mental health disorder on this issue. And he lays out three steps specifically. And before I get into the steps, Tawny, you want to talk a little, anything you want to say, like in opening on this particular topic?
Well, I'm so glad that you sent me this article last week, and it's totally on brand. This is the kind of stuff you and I talk about. You and I text about this. We FaceTime about this, and now we're podcasting about this.
It
makes sense. And my word nerd linguistic brain is so excited to learn a new word. Allodoxophobia.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, do I have that? But I know. Don't think I do. I don't think I do. But
I think it's getting better for me.
Yeah.
I think it's probably something that will always be underlying. I mean, maybe, I hope not, but it's underlying. But I'm also like, I guess with age and recovery and therapy, I'm also just like, whatever. happy.
Yeah. Zero fucks to give.
Yeah, it's but this article is so good. So yeah, we're gonna go over like the what's the author's name again?
The author is
Arthur Brooks.
Yeah. And really, that podcast series on All Things Happiness, How to Build a Happy Life is a great thing to check out. You can link to it from the article we're posting.
Yes, exactly. So Lisa and I are going to go over Arthur's three main points to this article. But if you want to learn more, like Lisa said, click the link in the show notes, read the full article, and then check out. He has a whole column that's really, like Lisa said, about a happy life. So yeah, let's dig in.
Okay. The first thing that he recommends of the three steps he recommends taking is to remind yourself that no one cares. This is a big, big one. And he says the ironic thing about feeling bad about ourselves because of what people might think of us is that others actually have much fewer opinions about us, positive or negative, than we imagine. Studies show that we consistently overestimate how much people think about us and our failings, leading us to undue inhibition and worse quality of life. So it's so true. It is, to me, like the epitome of this is me sitting in a meeting at work and talking about whatever it is I have to talk about and thinking that everybody is looking at me going, I think she should have buttoned one more button on her blouse, or she sounds kind of like an idiot. She keeps saying, whatever it is, I think that they are sitting there judging me. And in reality, they're not. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It doesn't matter, for one, because there's nothing you can do about that. But also, if you think about it, you can sort of take the power out of it, because turn the tables. If you were sitting there listening to a speaker, would you be laser focused on these little nits and faults that you found? And would you be spending all your mental energy critiquing that speaker? No. You would be thinking about, do I have to go to the bathroom?
Did I send that email?
You know, what happened with this other? So, you know, you're in, you're out, you're focused on what the person is saying. And, you know, maybe at times you're like, oh, I don't really agree with that, or I don't like that. But like, you're not sitting there. He's not all spinning around the speaker at that time. People are in their own worlds around that table or in that room. And the same thing goes at, you know, and I know we'll be talking about the holidays a lot because they're basically here. But when, you know, for me, a lot of what I would think before I got sober, going to Thanksgiving, we have a big family Thanksgiving that we see everybody that we only see like once a year. And I'd be like, are they going to look at me and think I gained weight? Are they going to, you know, do I look really, I would always be hungover. Like, are they going to look at how much I'm drinking? Are they going to, you know, are they somehow judge me? I don't have, you know, or just that constant thinking, if I think someone else looks really nice, I assume that they think I look really bad. You know, that whole notion. And that idea that, you know, that he says in the article, perhaps your followers or neighbors would have a lower opinion of you if they were thinking about you, but they probably aren't. Next time you feel self-conscious, notice that you are thinking about yourself. You can safely assume that everyone around you is doing more or less the same and thinking about themselves. So that is just, to me, that goes to that piece of shit.
Yeah. That reminds me of what you said at the beginning, is like, thinking you're the biggest piece of shit at the center of the universe, which, you know, which means you think you're a piece of shit. Like, you know, this is like a common recovery slogan, I guess.
Yeah.
And to like unpack that, it just means like, you know, you think you're a piece of shit, you're depressed, you're anxious, whatever. But there's also this like strange amount of self-importance where it's like, but I'm such a piece of shit, but everyone's obsessed with me. And so that really, number one, reminds me of that, because it's like, that really is something that I still struggle with. Like you said, with like seeing someone for the first time after quarantine, like, cause I have put on weight. I'm like, oh my God, are they going to think that? Or what are they going to think? And this also shows up for me like in the gym or at yoga.
Oh God. Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, well, that person over there, their chaturanga went way deeper than mine. I need to push myself. They're going to think I'm weak.
They're or looking at me thinking how bad I am.
Yes, they're exactly like my yoga practice is so important to the three people around me that they can't even focus on their own yoga practice because they're monitoring mine.
They can't believe how terrible I am.
Yeah. And they're going to go home and they're going to think about it for the rest of the day. It's so stupid to say out loud, but like that really is something that goes through my mind
all the time. I mean, it's something I had and this is like, you know, I was probably like, I was definitely more than 10 years sober when I gave a talk at my firm, the firm I was at before I left law firm life. And, you know, my role there had nothing to do with this stuff. My role there, I was the deputy executive director of the firm. But then after my book came out and there was stuff going on, there's a lot of stuff going on, as we know, in the legal industry around this. I spoke to my firm about this. And I don't know if it's because it was a home game or whatever it was, but I could get up. I had gotten very used to speaking in front of large law firms because I was doing a lot of it at that point. But when it was my colleagues, my coworkers, I got so anxious and I had a full blown, I was sitting. It was fortunate because I didn't have to like go sit down or pass out or anything, but I had a full blown panic attack during the talk. And I managed to get the talk out and I had somebody presenting also with me. So I had a little bit of a break to breathe and to try and bring myself down. But, you know, afterwards people were telling me, oh, it was so good. And a couple of people I was like, who I knew well, friends there, I was like, I was having a full blown panic attack. I can't believe that I did that. I was terrible. And both people who I said that to were like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
I didn't hear anything. Like you just sat and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I don't sound as good as I sounded at that other firm last week. They weren't there and they don't care. Like even if they had been, like, they'd be like, ah, she was better last week. I think she's having a panic attack. So.
Yeah, it's, and I mean, it's like you're saying, when you switch the tables, like when you're watching someone talk, you're not thinking,
right,
God, this person's terrible. Because like someone who is not good at, you know, giving a talk like you did, you wouldn't be asked to do that if you didn't know what you were talking about.
Right, right.
So it's normal to disagree with a speaker or have your own opinions or whatever, but like you're clearly a qualified person to speak on this topic and people came to that conversation to listen to it. So
yeah. And that's imposter syndrome.
That isn't. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I mean, I think just as artists we'll always struggle with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think that's right. And then the second piece or the second thing that Brooks recommends doing is rebel against your shame. And I'll just read what he wrote here. Because a fear of shame is frequently what lurks behind an excessive interest in other people's opinions, we should confront our shame directly. Sometimes a bit of shame is healthy and warranted, such as when we say something hurtful to another person out of spite or impatience, but often it is frankly ridiculous, such as being ashamed for, say, accidentally leaving your fly unzipped. So he gives an example. He says, several years ago, I was nearing the end of my first 90-minute graduate class of the year and realized I had given the entire lecture with my fly unzipped. There was absolutely no chance that anyone hadn't noticed it. Afterward, I realized something odd. I felt liberated, not to do it again, obviously, but from the fear of what might happen if I accidentally did something terribly embarrassing in class. After the fly incident, I couldn't imagine anything worse happening, and as a result, I relaxed and had a great semester. So it goes to, I think, that, and this is something that my therapist always talked to me about, like, what's the worst that could happen?
Yes.
You know?
Go, right? Like, let yourself go there, you know? And like,
and that's, then what?
This is like exposure therapy of like, you know, really facing your fear of like, oh my God, like, I can't believe that happened. But then it's like, okay, it happened. And I understand him saying he felt liberated because it's like, he had no idea. And he like rocked this presentation.
Yes.
And had no idea
and
this
the rest
happened.
Of the semester.
Yeah.
Because he got through and went, oh my God, if I did that class with my fly down, then, you know, nobody cared. It's true.
No one cares. Like it's the kind of thing where it's also like, if you can acknowledge something and kind of make fun of yourself a little bit, then it takes the power away.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, oh my God, that was, I can't believe that happened. Anyway, next.
Yeah. Right. And you move on, you know, it is definitely freeing. Like when I found that people did not realize I was having an anxiety attack on the stage, it gave me a different there. And I won't get into all the detail, but I am prone to panic attacks. And so for me, if I'm presenting standing up, it's much more likely to happen than if I'm sitting down, like the physical part of it. And so I have never feared. I always worry whenever I stand up that it's going to happen because I just don't know. But I have a bunch of tools for that. But now I feel confident that when I'm sitting and presenting, even if I have a panic attack, I can get through it because I've done it before. Mm. You know, so that sort of eliminated that piece.
So do you, when you're doing public speaking, do you ask if you can be seated while doing it?
No, because it's fine. Like I can do it. And, you know, I have my breathing stuff. I have my, I take a lot of performers do this, like Broadway people with people who suffer from stage fright, you know, live performers. My psychiatrist, actually, my meds doctor prescribed me a beta blocker that I can take. You know, I take it like an hour before one dose, an hour before I speak. And all it does is like, has no psychological effect or anything like that, but it opens the capillaries or keeps them open. It's like what heart patients take to keep the blood flowing. I know that the physical aspects of the anxiety attack cannot happen, right? It eliminates that. So whether it fully eliminates it or whether it's placebo in my mind that I've taken the beta blocker so I cannot have a physical anxiety attack.
Yeah.
Now when I stand up and present, I feel very confident. You know, I take the beta blocker and I'm like, okay, I'm good. I don't feel anything different, but just that knowledge that, you know, the physical, you know, sparks that would go off that would make me what happens when I have a panic attack, which is my knees get weak, I start to sweat, my head spins, it's hard to get breath. And those physical things can't happen. I might panic in my mind, but that I can work through.
Must have loved the transition to Zoom presentations.
You know, it's funny because once I conquered that standing up thing, I love it. I prefer to be in a room standing up.
Okay.
Which is totally, you know, now I feel kind of like, I'm good with this, you know. I'm not.
Your fly was
anymore.
Unzipped. You're good.
Exactly. My fly has been unzipped in terms of me having a panic attack during a talk at least 4 times. So, I've publicly done it and to varying results. Okay. So the last thing that he mentions is number 3: stop judging others. So this is a great one. He says, judge not that ye be not judged. He quotes Jesus. And he quotes the Buddha. Whoever judges others digs a pit for themselves. So he writes, maybe you think you'll face God's punishment or karmic justice for holding harsh opinions of others, but these lessons are just important while we're on earth. To judge others is to acknowledge a belief that people can, in fact, legitimately judge one another. And thus it is in an implicit acceptance of others' judgment of you. And I really love that because the more that I can see somebody in, you know, doing something or whatever, saying something that in the past I would have really judged them about, the more I can go like, okay, that's them. That's them. Then the more I can go, I'm me. You know, that what I think of that other person doesn't matter the same way that what that other person thinks of me doesn't matter. And what'd you think about that?
That reminded me while quoting the iconic Jesus and Buddha.
Yeah. Iconic.
I thought of Bob Marley, his song, Could You Be Loved? Because he says, while you're pointing fingers, someone else is judging you.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me think of that. And then there's also like that, you know, just, I don't know, idiom or whatever, where it's like when you're pointing fingers, there's three more pointing back at you.
Yep. Yep.
So it's like that just that goes with this. It's true.
Everything
that you're saying. And it's so weird because it kind of goes back to that, you know, biggest piece of shit at the center of the universe thing. It's like, you know, you and I are admittedly like we have our own insecurities. We have our own stuff that we're working through. You know, but then it's like there's sometimes this moment of like I have these moments of like I'm such a terrible writer, like what am I even doing with my life? But then I read something and then I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. This is a terrible piece. And I'm like it's this weird, I guess, dichotomy of imposter syndrome mixed with insecurity mixed with I don't even know.
Yeah, like this, it all flows together.
It does. And it's like, I think I'm so amazing at XYZ that I am the expert, therefore my opinion, yeah, and therefore judgment.
Yeah
my judgment is valid, and that makes no sense.
I also think that it's helpful if we, when we stop judging others like that, it just makes judgment overall, whether it's towards ourselves or to others, less of a thing in our lives. And judgment is really just not a productive, helpful place to be in. You know, what does it do? It doesn't change anything, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it is, and this is the way he closes the article. He says that I've learned that the prison of others' approval is actually one built by me, maintained by me, and guarded by me. This has led me to my own complimentary verse to Lao Tzu's original, disregard what others think and the prison door will swing open.
Mm-hmm.
If you are stuck in the prison of shame and judgment, remember that you hold the key to your own freedom. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I literally pinned this to my bookmarks because
I was just going to say, I see why you pinned this, because like, I feel like there's so many nuggets from this article that like we could just print out and frame.
Yeah. Like,
you know, there's just so many good lines in here that, and it's like the Arthur Brooks.
Yeah.
Arthur Brooks, like his column is so great because he tackles these really difficult subjects with nuance, but also efficiently. Like this is a pretty short article.
It's a very short article. And it's, you know, it's, I realize like, I just find myself, whether it's in talking to a sponsee or a sponsor or whoever in the world, like this topic of what other people think of us comes up all the time for people. And holds so many of us back. And and when we really unpack it, like we just have been talking about it, it doesn't, you know, it's not worth it. Like there's nothing to be gained, and it's liberating to try and let go of it.
That's it. That liberation again, it really is liberation. I'm going to try and use allodoxophobia in a sentence today, casually.
Does it make you feel better or worse that there is actually a diagnosis for that? I can't decide.
I mean, like I said, I love words. So like I recently learned the word orthorexia. Do you know that word?
No.
It's a type of eating disorder where people are unhealthily obsessed with like clean eating. Like people that are like always trying the latest fad or like follow diets almost to a fault of like obsession. It's a form of an eating disorder. And so I like when there's words for things.
Yeah. I know, but I feel like it almost, I guess it's good because it legitimizes something that we know we feel all the time. but I also don't want to feel like I have it. You know what I'm saying? I don't think I do. I think it would have to be like to a great extreme. Like it would have to kind of run your life, but it's a thing to watch out for. And it's a real thing.
It definitely doesn't run my life, but I mean, I think everyone can relate to this article. Like it's we as humans are, and this is like just an inherent thing.
Yep. Yeah.
That we struggle with is, you know, people pleasing and wanting to appear a certain way to others. Like it's just such a human trait.
Yeah, it is. It is. What were you going to say?
I have two songs for you.
Oh yeah.
So
Music Minute.
I was thinking of Demi Lovato and Cher Lloyd's I Really Don't Care.
Oh, nice.
And then Courtney Barnett, who I'm obsessed with. She has a song called Nobody Really Cares If You Don't Go to the Party. And I love this song. This song came out shortly after I got sober. And I love it so much because when she was promoting this song, she was promoting it like with billboards and street art, like spray painting, like professional street art, but like with spray painted. No one cares if you don't go to the party. And I loved that so much. It meant a lot to me in sobriety. And because, you know, there's that talk of FOMO of fear of missing out. But then, you know, over time, you learn to appreciate JOMO, the joy of missing out.
Totally. So
this song, this Courtney Barnett song really means that for me.
Very cool. So I would say for mine, I thought about Nirvana's Come As You Are.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of like not trying to put on who you're not. And then I thought another comparison song was to think about that in the judging thing. I thought of Talking Heads' Girlfriend Is Better.
Oh, I don't know that song, but I love Talking Heads.
You don't know Girlfriend Is Better? Okay.
No.
You have to listen to Stop Making Sense, their live concert album.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
Or watch the movie.
Watch the movie.
Big white suit, which is amazing.
Icon.
Yeah. But it's sort of about insecurity and him comparing, you know, to the girl. Anyway, it's a great song. It's a great song.
I love that.
Yeah. So those are that's our thoughts on that topic. And, you know, we touch on this, what other people think is none of our business, all the time. And so we thought it would be good to do a deep dive. And check out the article. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.